So what you're saying is saliva is... So what you're saying is saliva is... So what you're saying is saliva... So you're bag of dicks. So what you're saying is saliva is more a frothy mocha frappuccino to water's more pure raw form. When you accidentally inhale it.
Yes, yeah. Saliva's got like more foam and bubbles and whatever, whatnot in there.
Foam and bubbles.
So yeah, I'm driving over and just, you know, right as I was about to turn into your subdivision area, I just, you know, like, you don't think about it. You got like a little saliva going on in your mouth and you just like kind of breathe the wrong way. And then you got saliva in your lungs and it's no good. It's no good. It's no good.
But I do agree. There's something when you inhale saliva, it somehow takes far more to extricate it, far more effort than if you do that with water. I don't know why, other than, I don't know, I'm maybe prescribing to your froth theory, but, you know, we're going to really delve into science tonight.
Okay, great. I can't wait. I think I'm okay now. I might have a little more hems and whatever that you can edit or keep as your choice, maybe.
Well, I like to really make it clear that you're older than me, so... I like to leave your old man noises, like at least like
you put an old man filter on my voice.
Yeah, I mean Audacity comes with it.
Oh my god!
I just renamed it Smike, not Smike Filter. Smike was just Smike. So anytime you hear like the weird mouth sounds, it's just that filter. It's
not like a little bit of wheezing in my breath too.
Well, I don't. I know that's Smike with emphysema. I'm saving that for later when I need it.
Oh my god, I'm so damn tired.
Me too. Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are tired.
Tired Michael Smith, and you are...
Tired Eichel Karasi.
Ahem. So yeah, I didn't sleep much last night.
Me neither. High five. This is going to be an awesome episode. I'll tell you
why I didn't sleep.
Why didn't you sleep? Wait. Well, I know your wife's going away, so... Yeah, we get it. Sex all night. It's fine. This is a family pot. Oh, wait, no, it's not. Yo, so tell me about it, bro. No. Yo, did you hit that, bro?
Oh, my God. No, I get worried and stressed out about, you know, stuff
about
like that.
About other people traveling.
No, well, me or my wife. Okay, pretty much that's it. Okay. You go somewhere, I don't give a shit. No, I don't know.
Is that supposed to do something? Their cat may be dead at this point, whatever. Sleeping like a baby.
Yep. But no, it's going to be a 5-day stretch. With just me and a couple of dogs, it's not terrible.
You and your dogs,
yeah.
Your pack,
my pack.
your wolf pack.
It's and the dogs know something is amiss, and it's only been like not even one full night, and they're like, something's wrong.
So the dogs know something's amiss.
They do. They sense it
for sure.
And I wasn't even like doing anything weird. I was just, you know, coming home and I, you know, fed them and just, I don't, you know. Not doing anything crazy.
Well, I'm sure, like walking around,
not standing and weeping there, you know.
Well, okay, I wasn't gonna say weeping, but I'm sure walking around like would probably upset them a little bit, which is clearly what you were doing. Did you try to drink?
Nothing. I'm working on it. I'm trying to, you know, cleanse my cleanse. I guess.
Whoa.
I don't know.
Whoa.
Cleanse my throat.
You know, cleanse your throat.
This is green and. Flecky. Has green flecks.
It's a little flecky. It was much more flecked before I strained it. Might be a little too sweet for you. I apologize if there's too much simple syrup in it.
It is a little sweet. It's very mojito-like.
It's a Thai basil daiquiri.
Okay. So you would... Actually, this... What just happened? The cat?
Cat or dishes.
This would be probably interesting with, like, you know, crushed, like, daiquiri smoothified, whatever.
I thought about freezing it, but Simon, you know, he's sick, and I didn't want to, like, run the... Yeah. Also, it's, like, 20-something degrees out, so...
Yeah.
Well, I like to give fuck yous to Mother Nature. There's only so far I'm gonna go.
Oh.
It's pretty simple. It's, per serving, it's just 2 ounces of white rum... 5 fresh basil leaves, 2 limes worth of juice, and 1/2 ounce of simple syrup.
Okay. For cool. Cruising. I like it. I would like it more if it were a little less sweet.
Yes. Sorry.
Maybe a little more basil-y.
Yeah, I actually could have got, I did the amount they said, and I was thinking, of, you know what I was thinking of adding?
It was more basil.
I was thinking of adding cilantro.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's maybe I'll spruce drink. It up this summer. It'll make a reappearance, a little less sweet, a little more herbaceous.
Nice. Now you're talking my language.
Yeah, sometimes I got to try and experiment to realize it's not, you know, the recipe's not perfect. Speaking of experiments.
Uh-oh. As he pauses dramatically to sip his drink after saying something, though, and taking off the glasses and shirt and... No, okay, stop. Stop with the clothes.
Where'd you get that saxophone? Smike, I want to play a game. So, it's funny that you're tired because I was up a lot, as was Erica, with a very sick son last night.
Yeah.
With a double ear infection. So, I feel like torturing you tonight.
Okay, why not?
And by torture, I mean subjecting you to philosophical thought experiments and then probably mocking your responses.
Oh my God.
I didn't see that fucking thing coming, did
you?
No. And I thought it would be fun, since we are on equal footing on this one, since we're both familiar with it. I thought it'd be fun to start with the trolley problem.
Oh, the trolley problem.
Which we both know from...
Well, from philosophy and from The Good Place.
Well, yeah, I was thinking The Good Place.
certainly The Good Place has brought it to life in a very vivid way.
Very vivid. Very, very graphic.
Which is the way to do it, honestly.
Well, yeah.
I mean, if you're going to have the problem and have it be like a real humanized problem, you need that. I mean, I think Michael was dead on. You
know? Yeah, absolutely.
It's like, yeah, this is fine when you're just thinking about it hypothetically. But when you're there in the trolley and the people that you know are about to...
It's a whole other story.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And there's a lot of guts. Didn't they like need a windshield wiper eventually? Well, so for those who are not familiar with the trolley problem, very famous. I believe it was Kant who came up with it originally. I might be able to find out who it was.
I don't know.
But it's something like this. So these are philosophical thought experiments. I thought it'd be an interesting change from talking about TVs and movie shows all the time. So I will present to you a philosophical thought experiment or thought problem, and you will mull it and make old man noises as you think. And even if you don't, I'll put them in. So okay. Either way, you're going to make old man noises. And then you can give me your responses, and then we'll go from there. So the trolley problem goes something like this. A madman has tied 5 innocent people to a trolley track.
Yes.
An out-of-control trolley is careening toward them and is moments away from running them over.
Yeah.
Luckily, you can pull a lever and divert the trolley to another track. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, problem solved.
Cool.
The only problem is that the same madman, this is a real piece of work, this guy, he tied a single person to the other track.
Mm-hmm.
So, considering the circumstances, should you pull the lever and divert the trolley, killing one person but saving 5, or not pull the lever and kill 5 and save the one? Go. Yeah, and I'm starting this easy because I'm sure you've thought about this before.
Yeah. The obvious answer is, we know this from watching the good place.
The
is,
good space.
You know, you start with killing just the one person. It's the logical answer.
Right.
And then things get ramped up. Well, what if this person is more close to you? Or what if this person is a doctor and the other people are prisoners or convicts?
Let's keep it.
It gets, but that, I mean, that's the only way it starts to have nuance. That's the only.
No, I think Kantian philosophy gives it nuance.
Okay.
Because doesn't it ultimately come down to the concept of who are you to choose? Shouldn't you just allow things to run its course and the people are going to die, like, irregardless, so you allow them to die because you're not placing one life over another life?
Well...
Listen, you heartless fucking monster.
No, I'm gonna...
So, all things being equal...
All things being equal...
You don't know these people. You have 1 second to pull a lever and save some lives.
I save 4 lives. I can save 4 lives if I pull the lever.
Okay. Yeah, it's really tempting to be like, what if, like, I felt that inclination.
But there's no weight to it without those degrees and those, you know,
I think if we were two philosophy students drunk at a bar or whatever, then we would be able to dive into it a little more deeply. But again, it's Kantian logic. I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Right? Now, yeah, if you get into the... If it was a kid, then I would have a harder time pulling the lever, being a parent.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, all things being equal, don't know these people from Adam. They're all adults. And you really can't tell very well when a speeding trolley is heading towards a switch at a junction. I would also pull the lever.
Yeah. The other response is, this is a dumb question. Because, you know, this situation is never going to happen. Unless perhaps you're Spider-Man. Because this is basically the Gwen Stacy paradox.
Right. Spider-Man deals with this all the fucking time. Really, the question is, who is the madman and how is he so lame that he only got five people in one group? I mean, really, like, it's amateur?
Right. Well, because Goblin had, like, a whole...
Had a whole car. Had a whole trolley.
It was a bus? Was it actually a trolley originally?
I think in one version of it, it was a trolley.
Because, I mean, that would be the nod.
The trolley, right. The trolley problem.
Yeah.
And then, of course, but then the way they did it, of course, saving the one person still kills her. Because the one time that
if he had chosen to just save her, he probably would have.
No, I mean, that's what happens.
Okay.
Do you actually know the story in Spider-Man?
Yeah, but he tries to save both. He saves the trolley full of, or bus or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and he gets her, but
he kills her.
He ends up snapping her neck.
Because the one time in comic books where physics actually makes sense, the act of stopping someone's fall short by grabbing their midsection with a web would snap their neck.
Yes.
Because, yes, that would actually happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah. okay, well, we're in agreement there, but that was an easy one. I was underhanding it to you. I was tickling the underside there.
Whoa, hey.
Just trying to make it easy for you.
Hand off my underside.
Trying to make it easy for you. I'm going to give you another easy one that you've probably already thought about as well. And it is known as the Ship of Theseus, but you know it much more colloquially.
Okay.
Do you recall the first scene in the movie, and possibly the book, but in the movie of Dave Dies at the End? If not, it's okay. The very first scene of the movie, and I think it's also the book too.
Yeah. Oh, the axe.
The axe question.
Question, yeah.
So that is, I didn't know this at the time, but that is a derivative of one of the oldest of all thought experiments, which is the paradox known as the Ship of Theseus.
Mm-hmm.
This is from Plutarch, or Plutarch. And so the question is whether, in this thought experiment, it's a ship, remains seaworthy for hundreds of years thanks to constant repairs and replacement of parts,
mm-hmm.
right? So as soon as one plank became old and rotted, it would be replaced and so on until every working part of the ship was no longer original to it. So mm-hmm. the question is whether this end product is still the same Ship of Theseus or something completely new and different. Or to frame it like Dave Dies at the End, if you're fighting a zombie Nazi and when you killed him with an axe originally,
mm-hmm.
you broke the handle of the axe. No. Mm-hmm.
Either way.
You broke the handle of the axe, so you replaced the handle. His undead body froze over the winter, but then thawed come the spring and came back to life. And then you kill him again with that same axe, but then you break the head and you then replace the head. Is it the same axe?
Okay. So my answer is, this may be a cop-out, but I think it's the only rational answer, is that this is a semantics game. And the asking, is it the same so-and-so, is a pointless question. It's not. And it is, but it really isn't. It's how you define same, and that's all in that, you know. This is more of a wordplay question than a thought question.
Let's frame it. I think maybe a better way to frame it, because
this is the crux of it. You know, we're using language to play a little to make a philosophical.
Don't get ahead.
All right. All right. But this is more language based to me than thought experiment.
So to you, the question isn't, is it the same? The question is, what is the same?
Yes.
Okay.
I could make the same argument that as soon as an axe is chipped, it's a different axe. As soon as the...
I would argue against that, but okay.
Okay. Well, I have an axe and I can cut down a tree with it.
Mm-hmm.
After a few years, the axe is rusty and dull, and I have an axe that I can no longer cut down a tree with it.
Mm-hmm.
An axe that I can cut down a tree with is obviously not the same as an axe that I can't cut down the tree with.
It's the same therefore, axe, it just not doesn't the same still perform axe. Its function.
But you're changing the definition of the same.
Am I?
Is something that can cut down a tree the same thing as something that cannot cut down a tree?
Is it the exact same shape?
No, answer that question. Is something that can cut down a tree the same thing as something that cannot cut down a tree?
The way you're phrasing it?
Exactly. Yes. There you go.
I would say that playing the game as it is originally intended, not taking the horribly cop-out approach of...
I think I'm accurate, though.
I think you're accurate.
Oh!
I think that, and I was going to reframe this in terms of a car that you're rebuilding. I think that's...
Okay.
I feel like people have an approach. But we'll go with the ship. So the ship has a name, right? We name ships. So sure. It sort of has this personification thing. Mm-hmm. But if every single part of the ship has been replaced, I think it is no longer the same. If...
Okay.
An arbitrary 20% of the ship remains, it mm-hmm. has not yet been replaced, it is still the same ship.
And then again, I think that is an arbitrary answer.
It isn't, and I put that in my response.
So at 51% replaced.
Same ship. 81%, fucker's new. And then if you really want to get into it, how long between repairs? Because I actually think that matters, especially with something like a car or a boat that we tend to think of as having a personality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because, I mean, you know, we all named our cars in college because that was something we all did. Like, you know, we did. So if you, for instance, replaced every single bit of the car over the course of 10 years, like you're going to, because this is how people are, they adjust, mm-hmm. right? So the car is going to be the same car in your mind. If you go a couple years in between swapping out parts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you really want to get semantical about it.
And that's more of an emotional, I mean, it's...
That's true.
And this is all semantical. Okay, so here's the better question.
Oh.
You, and I don't know if this is actually true, but this is the conventional wisdom. All of the cells in your body theoretically get replaced every, what, seven?
7 years.
Ten, 7 years. Every I don't know if that's true or not. But that's, everybody says this, so we'll pretend it's true.
I've been laying claim to that fact for years, so I'm just going to say it's true.
So, are you the same person then that you were 7 years ago? And your answer based on the ship question would be, no, you are not. You are a completely new person.
I am, no, it is, I am the same person.
But this is, now you're changing your answer from the ship and the car.
Because we're now talking about sentience. If you're going to take this, then you can extend this to the Swamp Man paradox / Mary's Room paradox. I mean, I've been reading about these all day. / the teleportation paradox. So, all right, I'll see you then. I'll raise you. When Kirk gets teleported, is he still Kirk? Or is he someone new?
Oh, he's someone new.
I agree with that in so much as it is 100% all at once.
Have we ever talked about this? Because teleportation is like the most awful fucking thing
it's
in my
terrifying.
Mind. Terrifying. Because it kills you and it makes a new you.
You cease to exist. Yeah. And then your consciousness.
That's I don't buy that though. It's bullshit.
A facsimile of your consciousness.
Yeah.
And you know, they actually did this exact same argument in The Prestige.
Yeah, exactly.
It was the exact same thing.
And that was the only part I liked about it, because I was like, yes, somebody right, yeah. gets it. This That's is really what, fucked this up. This is what teleportation is, and
every
it's
time
fucked up.
I wondered, is it me, or am I dying? Yeah, it's...
Yeah, you're dying. No, you're dying. You're dying. Because you're the one that's there.
Right.
And it's just a new you.
And they are just blithely, like, fucking teleporting like crazy, but the crew of the Enterprise has died a ton of fucking times. Those red shirts died, unless they died on the ship, they were already dead, man. No, I would argue, yeah. I mean, to really delve into philosophy here, the philosophical approach, I would argue that, yes, the cellular aspect changes the mind, but changes the body. Your sentience is not replaced. Your sentience is scaffolded. It is accumulation of your, you know, experience over your entire lifespan. That is not replaced. If the cells in your brain, you know, being renewed every 7 years caused you to lose memory, then yeah, I think you would be a new person, but that isn't how I understand that it works.
Mm-hmm.
Due to alluvial folds.
Okay, so to take this into something that we've both seen, and without you know, I don't think we're going to do a spoiler episode on this, but...
Are you really going to?
Yeah. Why not?
All right.
You already since know, you're framing you know what I'm talking it. About.
Yeah.
I'm framing this in the context of Altered Carbon.
Yeah. Show.
So, hypothetically, and we see this happen in the show, a character makes a copy of themselves.
It's multiple characters do it.
Yeah. It's something that can be done in this world.
Right. And what is the law about that?
I don't remember.
It's very clearly illegal to do that.
Yeah.
For, I think, very good reason.
it is problematic, but...
But that is speaking to exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and when that happens, you have a copy of you in a copy of you. The body is a copy, and then the sentience or whatever passes for... mind, consciousness, spirit, whatever in the, you know, the world definitions of Altered Carbon is an exact copy of you.
So, just to frame it, in case you haven't seen Altered Carbon, this is something that's established in the first episode. So everyone's consciousness is in a chip, and the chip can just be swapped between different bodies called sleeves. So you can just, you know, never die if you have enough money and access to bodies.
Well, yeah, unless your chip gets...
Unless your chip gets damaged.
And then if you have enough money for a backup...
Then you're up in the satellite and you will literally never die. Yeah. But yeah, it is getting... So funnily enough, that is actually a pretty famous thought experiment called the split brain. But it's the concept of, they're saying if you took a brain... It's a little oversimplified compared to that. But if you took someone's brain, split it in half and put it in two bodies. Are you two people? Are you two of the same person? But yeah, ultimately it comes down to sentience. So in the Altered Carbon scenario, same person twice, in my mind.
Now, but they're obviously not the same.
But the minute they go two different directions in their lives, they're now two people.
Okay. So again, I think this is really just semantics.
I know, but it's fun semantics.
Okay.
Especially when you're drinking.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. Same person. So, yeah, I disagree.
Do you know I was a philosophy minor in college?
Did you know that I took a philosophy class? Only to meet women? That's not true. I actually really like philosophy.
I did too. There were some really fun classes.
It is the most useless.
We didn't actually degree. Have minors. We had concentrations.
Thank God, because you know what a minor in philosophy gets you at Starbucks? They actually charge you more, Smike. No, you know what they do?
No, it gets you.
They hand you an apron and say, "Welcome."
Exactly.
Because this is as far as you're going in your career, and they're drunk, obviously, because they're all unhappy and drinking.
Yes. But yeah, philosophy and religious studies was my concentration in addition to my major.
Religious studies?
Yeah. That's... I was looking for answers.
Did you find them?
Nope. I found enough.
Did you find that the quest is the answer? Did you have one of those larger realizations?
No. If we want to get a little deep into this for a second,
I'd say we're heading in that direction.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll just say that one of the most striking things that I learned in one of my religious studies classes.
Yes, was, hit me.
It was Japanese religious. It was a class on Japanese religions.
Okay, I'm going to stop you already. Makes so much sense about who you are as a person. Go.
And, you know, the two main ones were Shintoism and Buddhism.
Okay.
And...
Two fairly divergent, but similar.
Well, not exactly. So, the thing about Buddhism, when you look at the history of it in Japan, boy, everybody's like nodding off right now listening to this.
Hey! Hey, wake up! Wake up! Okay.
You go back into the history of it. It went through some really violent times where, like, the monasteries were just literally waging war on each other.
Yeah, I've seen Kung Fu.
Okay, but I mean, like, that shit like that was really happening.
Is that why they developed martial arts?
Flying, you know, they weren't shooting lightning or, you know, they didn't...
Whoa.
They were doing wushu sort of stuff.
Do you mean to tell me Big Trouble in Little China is not, like, nonfiction?
Anyway, that's also Chinese as opposed to Japanese.
That's true, yeah, that's a good point.
But anyway, it was violent, and the thing that struck me the most was that it was so similar when they got down, you know, at different times to and what they believed to the history of Christianity.
Okay.
Like, it was you know, a completely different framework, mm-hmm. but they still had, like, the same arguments and the same discussions and the same type of factions as Christianity.
Hmm. But a completely different reward system, right?
Not really.
No? Was Buddhism ever manipulated and abused by the wealthy?
Probably.
Yeah, I feel like
that's... It was one semester, so, you know... I didn't get all the answers in that. Aww. I didn't get to learn everything. But yeah, I mean, and they went through the idea of, like, well, if you accept Buddha...
Into your heart,
you will forgive everything.
Wow.
And it was like, I mean, it was exactly the same as, you know, different factions of Christianity. Huh. Which it was an interesting moment for me.
Right. No.
And, you know, take from that what you will. I took a couple different things.
It was a formative moment in your life.
Yeah.
I had two things to say to that. One, I had a similar experience watching The Matrix. Don't laugh. Okay, laugh. Specifically, so I was a very, what's the word? Not sheltered, but naive. Okay. I was a very naive nerd. Very naive up until maybe later college. Really okay. After college.
Well, this is, I mean, yeah, to put it lightly, a kind of a fucked up childhood.
Well, so growing up, like your childhood ending when your mom throws your abusive father out and, like, suddenly you are the man of the house. You were learning plumbing at the age of, like, 13. Like, man of the house, like, tool belt wearing, you know, keep the house running on top of a mountain. Yeah, it kind of does weird shit to you. but I didn't develop the savviness of how the world worked because we lived in our own fucking world. I grew up in this cult mentality. Mm-hmm. And then when that ended, it became survival, which is still not the real world. Mm-hmm. You know, so watching The Matrix, the thing that stuck out to me the most wasn't the, oh, life is an illusion. Mm-hmm. It was when Agent Smith says to Neo, humans are a virus.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one of those moments, like, if you could have done if someone could have filmed that, it would have been the Peter Jackson, yeah. the expanding and zooming at the same time thing.
Yeah, it's a zoom.
It's a rack focus trolley. It's a rack focus pan. It's right. A rack focus pan as a pan in. Yeah, I had that moment. So I get it. Yeah, I was like, oh, fuck. I never thought about that. The other thing is, interestingly, speaking of factions, I just read a fascinating article. I think it might have been The Atlantic. You might have read this too, actually. It was delving into...
If it was in The Atlantic, I probably read it.
It might not. It might have been Vox. It's one of those leftist...
I've still probably read
snowflake, unicorn, fucking, you know, millennial fucking news sources. But it was the history of the Southern... Christianity, not factions, but, you know, factions, I guess, would be a way to say it. Sects.
But this was specifically about evangelicals.
Yes.
I did read it. I know about, what you're talking about.
So the point of the article is, how can evangelicals support Trump? And the answer is, it's because their religion and their interpretation of the Bible had to evolve in a way that allowed for the enslavement of a person, of a human being.
Okay.
And basically the argument was, and, you know, this is obviously left-leaning, but the argument was, it makes you pretty shitty because you have to interpret the Bible in such a way that you are allowed to turn a blind eye to the enslavement, abuse, and murder, rape, all of those things of a vast majority of the world, as long as your white part of it is not endangered.
Yeah. This might be the same one that I read.
Very long article.
I think I read maybe a shorter one that was related to that, and it was about specifically about the history of evangelicals and how the article I read was kind of whitewashing things because it said, well, you know, evangelicals have a history of being abolitionists.
Oh, a different article.
Yeah, this is quite a different nothing. Article.
This one was out for blood.
Yeah. The two contrasting views on this.
Right.
But the one I was reading was more like, how can evangelicals do this when they have such a history of being pro-abolition? And what the author was kind of glossing over in a very big way is that the Northern evangelicals were very different from the Southern evangelicals.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, that's, you know, putting it pretty mildly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, Southern evangelicals were like pretty much all, yay, slavery. Well, and that would, you know, go along with the article you were talking about. But there was a northern strain that was very much there was a very strong abolitionist northern Christianity strain, and I think today's quote unquote evangelicals that we think, and that's a very broad,
it's very category. Yeah, it actually is surprisingly broad.
Yeah, covers lots of different sects. I think that the northern version, they became more like Unitarians,
mm-hmm.
and the more like
accepting open,
and open. Whereas you get like the Southern Baptists,
which yeah is what everyone automatically goes to.
And you know, I'm not saying these people are evil,
but the article I read did.
Okay. And I'm not going to really challenge that. So I'm just going to leave that there.
but it really dived into, I mean, it really, and we'll get back to the thought experiment. I think I didn't mean to take this sidestep, but it seemed like the right place for it because it was a great article. I'll find it and post it. One-sided, sure, doesn't give anyone on the other side a chance to defend themselves. Not that it would give room for that. But not only did it get into the concept of, well, this is what religion looks like when you try to build it around slavery. But also it talks about, like, women and women's sexuality and how, like, it had to be very tightly controlled. Yeah. And it was used to further subjugate because, you know, you have that, you know, the slave that rapes the mistress myth that, like, they would use to scare people and all that kind of stuff. You know, it really, the article was out for blood. It's really interesting article.
I mean, this is going to sound, I don't know. Smug or dismissive or whatever the fuck.
Are you going to sound like an East Coast elite?
Yeah. But the thing about Christianity is
okay. Broad swaths now. Broad paintbrush.
But it's come through so many translations.
Yeah.
I mean, people today think that the King James Bible is like the Bible,
right?
When it's
a Bible.
A Bible. It's
the latest Bible.
A copy of a copy of a copy of a copy,
mm-hmm.
and you know, layered with all these different, you know, changes over time,
like
and,
committee, like political shit.
Yeah, and political shit is in. Yeah. It's like, it's. I guess, you know, if you're a person who believes so strongly that you either have to not consider that. Or you have to consider that whatever changes have been pushed through by whoever's making the changes have somehow been,
or it's been ordained by God,
been ordained or guided by divine
voices,
something.
Isn't that a band?
The hand of the divine,
right? Hopefully, sure. Divine.
And that's got to be a band. Hand of the divine.
I think guided by voices is a band, but yeah,
I think that is.
If hand of the divine is not a band, we have to do it, but it has to only be Satanist songs, because you really gotta, you know, fucking get it to the audience when they're not expecting it.
Where I was going with that is that you've got this sort of, you know, mishmash of all these different
mm-hmm.
copies of translations of translations, and you're left with this like sort of mess that is, the average person is gonna like read the Bible and go, what? And then I don't know what any of this really means.
So then you start to pick and choose.
Yeah, you do. You have to.
It sort of leaves you in that position. Yeah.
Yeah, it leaves you in a position where you're like, well, I think it looks like it means this. And that makes sense to me. Yeah. That works with my mindset. So I'm going to go with that.
Exactly.
You know?
We could solve some. You and I right now in 5 minutes can solve so much. I'm going to pick up that phone. I'm going to call the Vatican. And we're going to say, look, we're going to help you abridge the Bible, like three sentences, sell like gangbusters, because everyone will read it. Love thy neighbor.
Be cool. We're going to call it the Bibe.
It's going to call it the Bibe, the bib. Feeling the bib. It's going to be love thy neighbor, you know, do unto others, whatever, and, you know, party on, Wayne. And that's fucking it, man. And problem solved. And that's how the buddies solved religion.
The King Buddies Bible.
The King Buddies.
All right. Lay another one of these stupid things on me.
All right. I had. Okay. Have you ever heard of the Chinese Room?
This sounds a little bit racist, but no.
It's actually not at all. You know, it's Mike. You're just bringing your own shit to the table. It's actually a sort of response to the Turing test.
Okay.
But it's interesting.
All right. Lay it on me.
Okay. So in this experiment, imagine that an English-speaking person has been placed in a room. It's entirely sealed, save for a small mail slot in the door. There is a door.
Okay.
And he has with him a hard copy in English of a computer program that translates the Chinese language. So
okay.
Disk.
Okay.
He has the ability through software to translate the Chinese language into English.
Okay. He has a computer that he can. I mean, right.
It's air gapped. No internet access. It's only function. The only thing it can do is take. You know, can translate. If you put something in there, choose a Chinese character, it'll tell you what it means in English.
Okay.
Okay. he also has plenty of. Or this person has plenty of spare scratch paper, pencils, file cabinets. Pieces of paper containing...
Is this an escape room? Because that's what it sounds like.
I know, but it's not. The point is he doesn't escape. Pieces of paper containing Chinese characters are then slipped through the slot in the door.
To him.
The only thing he ever gets...
Characters.
The only communication anyone ever has with him is to give him Chinese characters that are slipped... pieces of paper.
Okay.
Are slipped through the door.
And then he plugs them into his workstation and they
So then he can then use whatever, a book, a computer, whatever
okay. The
thought experiment has. So you probably see where this is going. So he doesn't speak a word of Chinese. He is an English speaker only.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you're on the outside, it's a sealed room. You can't see inside.
Okay.
So you are feeding this person the Chinese language.
Okay.
And he is feeding you back flawlessly translated into English versions of what you're giving him.
Okay.
From your perspective, what do you think about this person's abilities?
What?
What is this person? Is this person convincingly a master of the Chinese language?
Convincingly a master of the Chinese language?
Would you say if someone said, hey, does the person in the room, can they speak Chinese?
Oh, okay. So... We're taking all of that, we're taking out the setup that you just told me and saying,
well,
hey,
yeah, because you don't know.
I don't know what's going on, but right. There's this door with a slot.
You know there's a dude in there.
And I put in Chinese stuff and English comes out.
Right. But it's flawlessly translated.
So I go to somebody and say, with like the original and the translation,
sure.
And they say,
sure.
Yeah, that's the same thing. That's that guy nailed it, whoever's doing your translation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's your interpretation then, that this person must know the English language or the Chinese language perfectly.
Yeah.
So the point of this experiment is to extend that to artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So is artificial intelligence in fact sentient, or is it capable of so perfectly running software that it can mimic things that to human reactions seem like it's accurate?
Well, okay. So the setup that you gave me, I think, should have come later.
Probably. There's like three. I have three different websites with the same thing, and they're all presented differently.
Okay.
And I've been drinking.
So, yeah. So
excuses
if you presented to me
presented.
Like, hey, there's this guy, and you only get to him through a door. You only have a mail slot in the door. Chinese, and he puts out perfect translations in English. He's, like, so awesome.
You just sound like a stoned college student.
Yeah, well, okay, I thought that's what we were going for.
Okay.
So, yeah, the first reaction is, yeah, this person must know Chinese perfectly.
Oh, and what I was trying to do was kind of...
But as you know, say, okay, well, he's really doing this by just punching... He's really just data entry.
Right. With a pretty good piece of software that he's data entry. He's entering data entry.
But that's it. He's only doing data entry. He's
right.
Not... He doesn't know anything.
So this is the...
Which is theoretically
the
possible.
The microphone on your Google or Amazon or Apple device.
Yes.
The point of it is... What is AI? Is AI sentient, or is AI really good at running software and mimicking and outputting something that
all right,
reads
well, the question, the framing of the question makes this really just a matter of perspective. Sure. So the gut instinct, the hot take, the
what's your hot take? When this dropped last week.
Yeah. The hot take is that, yeah, this guy's great, or yeah, this AI is sentient, the bee's smart, knees. And intelligent. But as you presented it, the more you know about what's actually going on, the more it's like, oh, this is not quite as impressive as it seems.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But then you could like really, you know, you can take this a little bit deeper, and you know, if you look at all the coding behind everything, you'd be like, wow, that's actually pretty impressive.
But are you impressed by the AI or the person who wrote the code?
The person who wrote the code. Yeah. Which is probably lots of people, but well, anyway. Yeah.
Unless it's, what is it, The Secret of Mana? You ever heard about that?
I don't think so.
You should read about this. It's like one of those quasi-urban legends that's true. But apparently, I think it's The Secret of Mana, the coding of the game is so overly complex that it's actually a series of mini games worth of code strung together.
What?
Yeah, it's really hard to explain because when like Eric and I read about it, I wasn't as into coding. Like I have a minimal more modicum more understanding.
Well,
now.
I have to read this then.
Look into it. I'm pretty sure it's The Secret of Mana, but like the dialogue aspect of the game is its own fucking programming language.
Hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why like getting it onto another system was so hard because when anyone tried to be like, what the fuck is this? What is this fucking code? This is not a video game. This is a descent into madness.
Okay.
Yeah. Apparently the coder for that game is a fucking crackpot. No, it's Mother. Mother. Is that Secret of Mana, right?
I don't remember.
Fuck. Now I gotta look it up because I want.
All right. Anyway.
Because anyone who's listening to this, I think it's code,
secret. Well, while you're looking this up,
yeah,
this is actually something that you see when you get into coding. It's not uncommon for there to be multiple generation languages.
Okay.
So like there's the first generation language, which is like some like god awful machine language that nobody's gonna understand. And if you're you could try programming it, but it's like fuck this, no. Then there is a second generation language where you basically build build another code with the first language,
okay,
that you can use an easier to understand language with. So the second generation language interacts with that first generation language.
Okay,
it's gotcha. Just that the second generation is like way easier for somebody to understand. Okay. And that's kind of what keeps happening with programming languages. So there's like if you're if you're like me and you develop with something like C#, it's several generations removed from what's actually getting created. So I type in whatever code I want in this language called C#.
Right.
And it's easy. It's fairly relatively easy for me to understand, and the syntax is there. It makes sense
as a programmer.
Then, yeah, but when it runs, it's turned into something called a runtime language.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to read that, you're like, what?
What am I looking at?
Yeah,
right.
But it's does that kind of make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I just like took some online courses and stuff for coding, so.
So yeah, and you're looking at PeopleSoft, right?
No. W3 Schools.
Oh, but I thought you were doing PeopleSoft. Did I have the wrong one?
Yeah, I have the wrong one.
Nobody cares about this.
I did some stuff with it was all like random shit. W3 Schools to learn HTML and get into CSS. I stopped before Java and then Trailhead for sales. It's all Salesforce stuff.
So. Oh, Salesforce. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, PeopleSoft and Salesforce mix up sometimes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I was doing Trailhead. That's their stuff. But that's very light and breezy. They assume you're
probably... Yeah, and all of that's the same thing. It's a little like CSS is a different layer that, the deep languages of the browsers all understand it.
Right.
And same with HTML. You're writing something that this coded... piece of software called a browser can read. And that's like another, a different generation language. It's all, you know, layers upon layers of the actual languages.
Okay, so you're talking HTML1 versus HTML2 versus HTML3?
No, HTML is relating to the to what the browser reads. Okay. So HTML is a set of instructions.
Right.
And
it's changed over time.
But... It's changed over time. So when your browser says, okay, here's a set of HTML instructions, what am I going to do with this? Well, I have this whole, I'm made of code because I'm an application, and the code that I have is going to tell me what to do with this incoming HTML, whatever.
Right.
So you're coding to interact with a different code.
Okay, I got you. Right.
Does that make
you.
Okay? Yes. That's how all this stuff kind of works.
Okay. I didn't find what I was looking for because I think it's Secret of Mana.
Okay.
Or it's if that's a different game than Mother, then the Mother series, one of the Mother games.
So it's from what that sounds like to me from what you said is that he's made like multiple generations within the same application. So that
something
he's...
like that? Yeah. But like normally when a game has dialogue, it's just plain text in a wrapper stuck into the same code.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like his own code. To run the dialogue, so it was a separate piece. It was it's just like so insanely complicated that it just like truly frustrated many people. Anyway,
that was the exciting coding portion.
Yeah, wow, we really we're just hitting all sorts of shit. Any of that? I'm gonna leave it all in.
Oh my god!
Just to knock people out. Buddies in Space, your narcoleptic. Do you take Ambien? Listen to Buddies in Space again. There's two.
You know what movie? While we're talking about this, and you brought up The Matrix, the movie that it didn't have quite the same effect as The Matrix on me, as The Matrix did on you. I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is a strong drink.
Yeah, it's mostly booze.
But one movie I remember from kind of around the same time that really struck me.
If you say The 13th Floor, I'm gonna.
No, Dark City.
Existence. Yeah, Dark City.
And that, like, I mean it. It messed with me for like a few days.
And Dark City is a take on the vat and the brain in the vat thought experiment that I was skipping.
Yeah, okay.
What is reality? What are your memories? Yeah.
And yeah, the premise of Dark City, spoiler alert.
Fuck that. Hey, by the way, Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense is fucking dead. Oh, look, the statute of limitations on ruining movies is firmly over on both of these. Go ahead.
So yeah, the whole premise of Dark City is that your memories, if your memories are changed, does that change you?
Right.
Are you,
if you have the memories of just your serial killer,
are you something more than that?
Right.
And I think that the movie kind of went more towards you're more than that, but it was a little bit of a cheat.
The movie's a bit of a cop out, but it was still very, especially at the time. Given the
it never really got to
it never answered the question really,
but it presented it like crazy.
Right. Well, its setup was you're in the process of being reprogrammed to think you're a serial killer. Mm-hmm. But when you wake up, everyone else thinks you're a serial killer, but you actually didn't really get those memories. So it really does skirt.
Yeah.
Part of it because it gets interrupted. He didn't actually get those memories. But so much else about the movie was really interesting and inventive and creative. So you kind of give it a... And then there was Kiefer Sutherland, which I don't know what the fuck he was doing.
I like that performance more and more.
I'm not poo-pooing it. I literally don't know what the fuck he had as his impetus. It was interesting.
Yeah.
And it's more acting from Kiefer Sutherland than he's done on any procedural TV show in the last 15 years.
But one more thing about Dark City.
if you haven't seen Dark City, you really need to watch it.
But when I started watching the movie, the first time, like, what the fuck is going on with this guy? Yeah. This is awful. And then later, when you realize what's all been done to him and what he's even done to himself, it's like, right. Oh, okay, how's that kind of makes sense.
Right.
So yeah, love that movie.
Yeah,
and
great movie.
Yeah, it does give you the is this all real or could this all have been just implanted in my memories minutes ago?
Mm-hmm. The brain in the vat.
Don't know.
It's a very old concept. It seemed like it started with The Matrix, but it's been around a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
Are you familiar with
Blade Runner? Even kind of a little bit.
That's true. They presented it slightly differently because of the replicant angle, but...
Yeah, but it was really the same question. And it's, well, more with Rachel. That was her. That was a big thing with her.
But wasn't she a replicant?
Yeah, but she had the memories, so she didn't think she was a replicant.
Right, well...
So, and that really blurred the line. Well, it's like,
did Deckard or... according to the sequel, no, they did not go with that angle. Okay, here's one. It's funny because this actually is very, very, very related to an X-Files episode that just aired. Mm-hmm. By the way, they're doing... The new X-Files is like really up and down.
The original series was up and down too.
No, like it's crazy. More up and down because the lows are really low.
Oh, there were some really low points in the original series.
Yeah, but this like one episode to the next is like, it's like a fucking MKG or like a seismograph. It's like up and down, up. I'm flapping my hand up and down.
Yeah, you are. And it's breezy in here now.
Is this cooling you down, bro? Is that cooling you down? I'm a motherfucking human fan. They actually present a couple different variations of this, and I do want to get into Wittgenstein's Beetles
that sounds exciting.
It's another really old concept that we've all grappled with as children, but I'll do this one first, and I'll go the Thompson's Violinist side of this.
I love the names of these.
I know. Well, the other one, there's two versions. The simpler one is the Utility Monster, and then the more specific one is the Thompson's Violinist.
I'd love to have a utility monster. That sounds very useful.
You would not. This is not what you think it is. This is related to utilitarianism.
Okay.
And so utilitarianism is an ethical philosophy which says that we should act in such a way as to cause the greatest amount of good for the greatest amount of people.
Okay.
Do you see the inherent flaw in that
sentence? Wait, run that by me again?
Okay, so the main tenet, the one sentence summary of utilitarianism is that we should cause the greatest amount of good in the greatest amount of people.
Okay.
But apply math to that, and you can start to see why that's a problem. So I'll frame it differently. The utility monster part of this says, imagine that we create a being that extracts more utility, more joy out of things than everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So if I have a piece of cake, I get 1 unit of joy from it. If it has that same piece of cake, it gets 1,000 units of joy.
Mm-hmm.
So shouldn't you give all the cake to that, according to utilitarianism, because that is creating infinitely more joy. Even though it's across one person, it's still more joy than if you spread that among 1,500 people. Do you see the problem there?
Yeah.
So it's a little abstract, but it really takes the utility monster and makes it not as fun as it sounds. I like the Thompson's Violinist version, again, because of the very, very similar X-Files concept. But so let's say one morning, you wake up attached to an unconscious violinist.
Attached? Attached. In what sense?
So the violinist is sick, and only your blood can keep them alive.
Okay.
This is where it gets creepy. So a society of music lovers paid doctors to hitch your circulatory systems together in the night.
Uh-huh.
So against your will, you went to bed, you woke up, and your circulatory system is linked surgically to this violinist, this world-class violinist circulatory system. So the violinist is going to require this arrangement for 9 months. If you unplug, you'll be fine, but they'll die. Because they need blood filtering magic. I don't fucking know. So would it be murder to separate yourself from the violinist? You, the unwitting, unwilling...
murder?
So you went to bed, you woke up attached to another person, keeping them alive. No one asked.
Okay, so this is actually a tough one.
It is a tough one. That's why I saved it for later.
All right. Is that murder?
Is it murder?
Oh, man.
Because
I know where this goes.
Is keeping that person alive.
I know exactly where this goes.
And you are just you. A whole society of music lovers did this to keep this other person alive. So in their mind, who is more valuable, right?
Yeah. I don't think it's murder. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's my gut feeling. That was lame.
Circulatory system joke. High five, bro. Yeah.
No, I didn't deserve that high five.
Give me that five back.
Okay.
Ow. Oh, no, we're attached to the...
I don't think it is. I mean, I don't think that... The element of being forced into this situation
right is paramount to your interpretation of what murder would be.
It is.
Okay.
So for me to return to my, to have my own autonomy,
your free will, if you will.
Yeah, I don't see how that can be murder.
Okay. But just pointing this out, you are keeping this person alive. I'm trying to complicate it. Just
yeah. Argument's sake. Okay.
So even though you did not choose to be in the situation, you were not given any choice in the matter. You find yourself in
the situation. I can still be a nice person and, you know, go through this.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't.
But it is not murder. No, it's fine. I mean,
I don't think it's murder.
You're a heartless human being, but I still want to, it's fine to say that. So you, yeah, okay, so you're saying murder. I mean, and really this opens up the broader argument of, like, what is taking a life and what is murder and what is premeditation and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah.
I personally...
But I mean, okay, go ahead.
Personally, I would be very unhappy and I would probably bitch for 9 months about it. But I would do it because I would feel like, yeah, it would be murder. Because even though I had no choice in the matter, and my free will and my autonomy had been taken from me, and I would sue like the Dickens,
yeah,
I am suddenly, by my will or against my will, I am now responsible for another person's life. And if I just grin and bear it for 9 months, according to this ridiculous scenario, I will be fine and this person will live.
Yeah. But I mean, we also get into the word murder, and this is another semantic game.
I think it always comes down to semantics, and I think culturally it probably varies too.
Yeah, because murder it has a specific legal meaning.
Yep.
But really, I mean, this question is really about abortion.
Yes, this framing of it is about abortion.
Well, okay.
The utility monster is not. And there's another version of it.
It's 9 months. This is obviously an abortion.
Well, this is very clearly, yeah. So let's say it's 3 months. All right, let's cheat. Let's try to divorce it from that.
3 months is even easier. All right, I can do 3 months.
I can do that. But that doesn't answer the question. Is it murder if you know, your beloved sister's wedding is in 2 months? And you are married. You got ordained and are marrying them, and you cannot do it because you have to be in a hospital for the whole time.
Okay.
Like, you know, you just start to pile the shit on.
This violinist is going to owe me so big time after this.
You were playing at my sister's first anniversary.
Exactly.
Ultimately, this is the Rick and Morty penis. Your penis is this life-saving organ of this alien creature.
Well, okay.
It's always the same argument.
Yeah.
I saw another version of this, which is even simpler, and it's funny because I want to do this one first because the other one's kind of more ridiculous.
Okay.
But it's the sack of organs thought experiment. But you see where this is going? You are a sack of organs, right? You are a healthy-ish person walking around with functional organs. Each of those organs could save someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
So again, using utilitarianism. Would it be the better choice to kill yourself and that's it? No. And to kill yourself and have each of your organs given to another person. So let's say, I don't know, I'm just going to pick a trend. 10 of your organs could save. So would it be better from a utilitarianism standpoint? Would it bring more happiness into the world, more joy to save the life of 10 people with each getting one of your organs and all the people that would be happy because they're alive? Does that outweigh the people in your life that will be sad because you died to do it?
Because
mathematically, there's more joy in the world.
That does get tough. But no, I'm using my organ.
Yeah, dude, fuck that.
Nobody's gonna. I don't know. Nobody's gonna say. Well, okay. Some people might say, you know what? You're right. Take my organs.
One character in The Good Place.
Oh, yeah.
But you need one of your kidneys. No, you know what? Take them both. You need them more.
I don't know. You get to a point on these.
Yes, I know exactly where you're going.
Where you realize that, you know, we are not logical creatures. We are creatures of,
base
of subjectivity and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think we like to pretend that we're more logical and more pragmatic than we are.
Well, I think that's why we think up things like philosophy and law. And
yeah,
I think it lends that veneer.
Yeah. You know, we want there to be justice. We want there to be, you know, we want things to make sense. We want to be able to see it, say, well, I made the right choice. I made a smart decision. I made a rational choice.
There wasn't a chemical process that happened in my brain based on some feelings I had in my lunch.
Yeah.
And maybe I was sick at the time and that led me to this like outcome.
But you know, when you poke too much at this, you like, I can't override my feelings. I can't override, you know, the part of me that says, no, I don't want to kill a baby to save 100 people.
Right.
No, I don't want to give other people my organs.
I'm using them.
Just fuck you, no.
Yeah.
And that's not, you know, we're not that cold, logical thing.
We wouldn't be human if we were.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work like that.
Now, what I'm going to find... I'm going to spring one of these on you.
Whoa!
I'm trying to find the name of it, though, so you have to stall for me. And it's okay. Related to I Have No Mouth.
But I Must Scream. Yeah, I Must Scream.
Yeah. I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. We kept screwing that up.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. But you know what the funny thing is? As I was going through webpage upon webpage of thought experiments, it kind of dawned on me that, like, ultimately, I think thought experiments are just dickish, overeducated college assholes just trying to fuck with each other. Be like, I'm gonna present to you a really shitty situation that's going to make you feel bad no matter what you choose. And then pick it apart because I'm an overeducated asshole. That kind of is what I landed on with. This is where thought experiments come from. It's the Goodwill Hunting. How do you like them apples?
Man, I'm having trouble finding this. And
would you want to paraphrase it?
Yeah, so somebody came up with this idea.
Okay.
And the fact that somebody came up with it freaked a lot of people out.
Oh, I like it.
I can't find the name of it. We can add the name later, but it's like something's demon or something's basilisk. Okay. Oh no, it's basilisk. It's something basilisk. Look this up while I'm talking about it.
Okay, but I'm trying to listen to
you. Look up like basilisk paradox AI. So you're taking you're springboarding off. I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream. Which is
wow, the most terrifying thought experiment of all time.
Yeah.
Rocco's basilisk.
That's it. So it's a little bit complicated, and I'm gonna try to see if I can summarize it. But if you look this up and you look it up deep enough, you spend enough time with it, it can be really terrifying. And we're probably doing a great disservice to the world by spreading the information on it.
It's right. Starts right there.
Okay. You go ahead.
Oh, okay. What if, in the future, a somewhat malevolent AI were to come about and punish those who did not do its bidding? So what if there were a way for this AI to punish people today who are not helping it come into existence later? In that case, weren't the readers of the blog where this was posted, or the forum it was posted, right then being given the choice of either helping that evil AI come into existence or being condemned to suffer? I don't get it.
It's a little convoluted, and you kind of have to spend time thinking about it. But the premise is
Rocco's
based on
basilisk.
The premise is based on this could be virtual reality.
Okay.
What we're experiencing could be the AI putting us through a simulation.
Okay, which is not a particularly new thought.
Right, and if it is that, if the AI is trying to figure out how to get us to do what it wants.
Mm-hmm.
It can torture us if we're not doing what it wants.
That doing what it needs for us to do to bring it into existence?
Right.
So it's running retrospective, like, simulations?
Yes.
Okay.
So the problem with this is that if we're in this,
we never know.
We're not going to know.
Okay.
And we're going to have to help it.
Right. Because we would,
because if we don't know, we're going to be tortured. Life is going to be awful for us.
But would we know we're getting tortured? That's what I don't get.
The fact that we've brought this up, that we've had this thought, and we're in, the core of this premise is we're in a simulation.
Okay.
And we know, it doesn't matter if we know we're in the simulation or not.
Okay.
And this is so convoluted and weird, but and I'm
we're heading drunk, into super abstract drunk territory, but yeah, go give it, preach right. It, brother.
We're in a simulation. The AI is trying to figure out what it needs to do in order to get the power that it wants to have.
Okay. And it wants to be Emperor Palpatine. It's going to figure out how to get there.
Right. So when somebody has a thought like, well, I mean, in theory, it could just torture us until we do what it wants. And I guess we'd have to go along with it.
That would then enable it to do that very thing. And we're the architects of our own destruction.
Yeah, we are the architects of our own destruction. Meh. By having that thought.
Meh.
By saying, God, that would be awful. And the AI is like, oh, well, there we go. There's my answer.
Meh.
And we give it, yeah. It takes a particular mindset
to be
terrified by this.
Yeah.
And there are those people out there. It doesn't really do much for me. But some people, and if you read more about...
Well, this, the article I found, the subheading was, why are techno-futurists terrified of Rocco's paradox?
Yeah.
And why are some people unable to get past it?
Yeah. So some people like get incredibly hung up on this and are, you know, furious that somebody would have voiced this.
So Dollhouse got into this in a different sense.
Okay.
Dollhouse was...
I never watched that. Was that... I heard such mixed things about that.
So Dollhouse required the longest initial investment for payoff of any show I've ever seen.
Not a great sales
pitch. It's not a good sales pitch. And I'm pretty sure Joss
Whedon openly said that. Especially for a show that gets canceled.
It got two seasons, and it got two capstone episodes or set in the future that actually helped a bit, kind of lessened the sting. But Joss Whedon, I think he said, give me six episodes and it'll make sense. And everyone was like, that's a lot. We stuck it out, and we enjoyed it. It was an interesting show. But I'm just going to spoil this because it's sort of out of nowhere. The premise is the premise for most of the show. Mm-hmm. And then this sort of Rocco's Paradox thing takes a left turn, and then the show goes into gonzo future horror territory out of nowhere, and that's kind of where it ends. But the premise is very much kind of like Altered Carbon. Like, these people called dolls, in this case, exist in this childlike state, no pain, just happiness and simple childlike joy. And they're rich people go to this place, the dollhouse, and they pay to have them programmed to do whatever they want. Could be a lover, it could be a bank heist, it could be, you know, I need to have a talk with Einstein, let's take everything we knew about Einstein and program into a person, that kind of thing. And that's the show. And then they become sentient and they rebel, and you know, it gets into a lot of this, you know, what is sentience, what is self. And then a character, the genius scientist who developed the whole thing in the first place, comes up with this concept. Well, like, I think I figured out how to remotely do this to anyone. Like, just like that. And then that...
To overwrite their
person, their persona, and make them a doll, and then reprogram them. Like, and they could be in another state, and they just, bang, you're done. And that destroys the world. That thought destroys the world. Because, and they had that moment.
Just knowing that could happen.
Well, because there are multiple people on the show who are smart enough to make it reality, and then they do. But it comes back to his mind is destroyed because he grapples with, I think they have to go into a VR to even talk to him because he's so insane by the guilt. But the best part of that whole storyline at the end is he has this moment where he says very lucidly, like, once you think this, once I had this thought, it couldn't be undone.
Right.
The mere thought brought about the end of humanity. and I feel like it's very similar.
Yeah.
And again, it didn't upset me then either because it was so preposterous.
Right.
But I get it. On a cold, calculating, logical level, I get why that would be terrifying to people. But those people are dumb. and should probably, you know, jerk off more, or get laid, or go for some runs, or lift some weight, something to get their minds off of dumb shit. Because, I'm sorry, if that's the case, we're fucked anyway. So what? It's like worrying about ball lightning and spontaneous human combustion. Like, okay, maybe that's real, but what the fuck am I going to do about it? You know? We are Buddies in Space. You are.
That's Michael Smith, and you are.
And Michael Crossy.
And we are helping to bring about the end of humanity.
Or saving it. Maybe we're saving it.
I think we're working on the end of it.
All right. Hey, you know what? That means our podcast was important. No matter how you slice it, we had fucking massive impact on humanity. Take it away, Melanie.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit stolendress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
Wow, this one went long.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
well, maybe cut some of that down. The stuff when I was like, you know, gagging and throwing up.
Obviously, I'm going to leave that in. Well, you know what I do, actually, because you never listen, because I auto-tune that. And then I make a little song, and sometimes I put some Irish music and make it a jig. None of that's true, but it's, you know, maybe I will do it now.
Altered Carbon next time. We'll talk more about that.
Yeah, we've just been dipping in that well an awful lot. I wanted to,
okay.
You know.
That's cool. Eat my brain. Yeah, yeah.